morning. So today, I don't know how many of us in the room are particularly interested in early child care centers, but some of the issues that we encountered and had to deal with, I think, are probably applicable to anybody doing community-based work, particularly in settings serving underserved populations. I have nothing to disclose along the lines of conflict of interest. The objectives for this particular presentation is to try to help explain potential barriers involved in evaluating programs within child care centers, additionally designing evaluation plans to ensure methodological rigor, despite all of those systematic, problematic issues that we have to confront in the real world, rather than inside our evaluation and research methods classes. And lastly, discuss the potential trade-offs between feasibility and scientific rigor, because there's frequently compromises that have to be made whenever we're actually in the trenches, while still trying to produce quality evaluative work. So therefore, I'm going to speak briefly about the particular nutrition policy and practice intervention that we evaluated, and then move into some of the program and evaluation context and considerations we had to take into consideration, and then talk about our evaluation design and some of the advantages and disadvantages of our particular evaluation, and then lastly, some additional comments regarding evaluation nutrition programming in child care centers. So that being said, the CDC created these community transformation grants to try to really support awardees in producing systems population change using evidence-based community preventive health activities. And it involved five strategic directions, the CDC said. Those were smoke-free living, active living and healthy eating, high-quality clinical preventive services, social-emotional wellness, and healthy and safe physical environments. By the way, the community transformation grants were part of the Prevention Public Health Fund, and as part of the negotiating that went into the omnibus budget bill of 2 years ago, they were killed. They were replaced by PITCH and a couple other smaller funding mechanisms from the Prevention Public Health Fund. BRHPC and Broward County used these funds to launch TOUCH, Transforming Our Community's Health. And the CDC had the five directions. Grantees were allowed to focus on at least three. They had a core three. We ended up doing four, including active living and healthy eating, where the particular strategy of system and policy change in early child care centers regarding nutrition and physical activity and screen time took place. So the annual or multi-year objective for the early child care center intervention, and I can tell that we are in a room of evaluators, so everybody's like, wait a minute, that's not a smart objective. It's not specific, measurable, and attainable, relevant, and time-specific. Well, that's okay. The CDC had its own way of doing things in our evaluation plans and our community transformation implementation plans. So this was what they were looking for. We wanted to increase the number of children being cared for in licensed early child care centers that met Caring for Our Children National Health and Safety Performance Standards, with the overall idea of improving healthful eating and health status of the children that participated in these centers. Therefore, the specific components and activities that were involved in the intervention included trainings center directors and staff to enhance the nutrition, screen time, and physical activity policies within their settings. We had consultants that went out and did a train-the-trainer model where they trained Quality Counts Masters teachers. That's a local quality improvement organization within Broward County that works with early child care centers. And the consultants trained those master teachers in specific nutrition, physical activity, evidence-based curriculum. And then these trainers would go to the centers. Well, they would have meetings of the center directors and staff to train them on the policy change intervention. In order to determine who would receive what dose of intervention, the centers filled out a self-assessment regarding their nutrition environment. And those who were designated Tier 1, who self-reportedly weren't that bad off, received 2 hours of instruction from the teachers and materials to support the curriculum. Those who were less well off were designated Tier 2. They received the 2-hour training session, the materials, and they received technical assistance for about 3 months, where the consultants and trainers would come out to the centers just to see how things were going and give them any sort of input on how they could perhaps improve or enhance their changes. Now, as far as the context and considerations, we were in some pretty tight financial and human capital resource issues. The grantees of the CTGs had to do at least three of the five strategic directions, Our group did four. Our evaluators had to do a focused evaluation on at least one intervention within a strategic direction. And my colleague and I, Dr. Nicole Cook and I, being apparently a bit ambitious, decided, hey, we'll do three focused evaluations, just the two of us, across three different strategic directions. And so we were spread thin as it related to our evaluation budget, and it's particularly our human capital, since there was just two of us. But we did have a cadre of Masters of Public Health students to help out, which I don't know about all of your organizations, but it's definitely convenient to have a captive audience to help out. Additionally, the Early Child Care Center evaluation utilized a very resource-intensive data collection tool, the Environment and Policy Assessment Observation Tool, EPAL. And I don't know if any of you have used it. I'll talk about it more later. But it required, we had a modified version, and it still took 6 hours per observation, per observer, per child care center to collect the data. 15-page observation protocol. So we, if you're paying students to go out and do that, it adds up pretty quick. Fortunately, our evaluation coordinator, who was a student and graduated while he was our evaluation coordinator, was salaried. So the poor sucker was stuck going out in the field a lot. We didn't have to worry about it. Additionally, one positive side of our context of resources and costs is, as I was mentioning, we had a cadre of Master of Public Health students that were working with us on a number of these interventions, because not only did we do focused evaluations for the CDC, we also did programmatic assessments for the grantee to just help them out in different strategies they were working on. And so we had students that were trained in NIMS, Nutrition, Environment, Measurement, Survey. We were doing corner stores for that. They also were trained in surveying corner store owners. They were going into patient-centered medical homes and doing surveys with patients and into multi-unit housing complexes for the elderly. So we had a group of students that were just getting a diverse amount of experience and training in data collection. So we were able to borrow from that pool to educate and train them on EPAL. And they were quick to learn and move into the new context. However, another consideration that was a particularly interesting one for us was accessing the population itself. We were fortunate enough to have community partners serve as a liaison between ourselves and the early child care centers as far as introductions and scheduling, which was very important because at times the early child care centers seemed reluctant, if not flat out suspicious of us, coming into their centers. And having taught high school for 2 years after graduating college in a disadvantaged, underserved high school, I kind of get it. You always have somebody coming in and looking over your shoulder, poking into your business. You know, what's going to be the effect of this observation on me, the child care center, who's worried about as far as like licensure and whatnot. And one thing I tried to reiterate to them was, we are not here to evaluate you. We are here to evaluate the program to make sure that the program's working as best as it can for you, so that we can help you serve your children to the best possible abilities. And that didn't really seem to quell their concerns too often. But nonetheless, and it didn't help that one of the trainers during the training that I attended informed the audience, now I know nobody likes tests, but the CDC is spending a lot of money on this, so we have to be evaluated. So I know, we're just going to have to grin and bear it. And I'm sitting there thinking, you got to be kidding me. Just throw us under the bus before I even introduce myself to these people. In addition to that, since these are early child care centers that are in underserved areas, they have a lot of programming going on. And so it's not just us that are trying to gain access to their centers. There's other evaluators from other programs trying to come in and gain access. And they're licensed and accredited, so they have to do accreditation activities. So there's a lot going on in these early child care centers that, as an evaluator, we had to work with. So our design was a one group pre-post, and once again, looking at the crowd of evaluators, you're all grimacing, saying, well, what about the random selection, random assignment? You know, we need a treatment group and a control group. How are you going to say anything valuable? Well, feasibility in the real world and the costs involved in it had us limited to just a one group pre-post. Because of the resources that were expended in doing the data collection, the sample size ended up being small. Plus, our sampling plan, I was about to take some wind out of my sails, so I'll hold back on that. Let me talk about our sampling frame first, and that will hint at the one group pre-post. We had a sampling frame of a list of all licensed child care centers in Broward County who were participating in the Quality Counts Initiative, which is a quality improvement program we have in Broward County, and the USDA Child and Adult Care Food Program in Broward County, which is the federal government subsidizes food provision in centers where at least 25% of the students are low income, and the centers who were participating in the early child care trainings. And from that sampling frame, we took a stratified random sample of touch priority zip codes, secondary zip codes, and additional zip codes, identified using GIS analysis of zip codes within Broward County that had higher proportions than those of the county for diabetes, poverty, population identified as black, and unhealthy retail to healthy retail square footage by population density. The priority zip codes involved a convergence of all of these variables. The secondary involved the convergence of at least diabetes and poverty, excluding the priority, and the additional were just everybody else. So here are maps of Broward County. To the west is the Everglades. To the east is the ocean. South of us is Miami-Dade. North of us is Palm Beach. And the upper, now obviously the you can't make out the writing, but just for the visual, the upper left-hand corner is the concentration of diabetes per zip code in Broward County. The lower left is the unhealthy food index. The upper right is percent black. And the lower right is earned income tax credit for poverty. And in the middle is the convergence of those areas. So we were focusing our evaluation on those zip codes that had above the county of rate for all of these four together. So talking about one group pre-post, at baseline, our sample originally involved 36 centers, but 13 of that 36 just decided they weren't going to cooperate with us. They just weren't going to be involved. So that left us with 23, and the CDC gave us the go-ahead saying, their statistician and sampling expert said, this is good enough, push forward. And so we had 13 in the priority zip codes, 4 in the secondary, and 6 in the additional. But come follow-up, just a year later, after what I thought was a very good round of interacting with the centers and establishing relationships and getting some smiles from the centers, we had difficulty getting back in. I thought it was going to be so much easier this second time, but we lost only 5 centers, and so we ended up with 10 in the priority, 3 in the secondary, and 5 in the additional zip. And the reasons we experienced some reluctance or some inability to participate was we had centers changing ownership, centers going out of business. One was undergoing reaccreditation. They were getting ready to have the accrediting agency come visit and just didn't want us around because they were busy with other things. And then we had one group that just said, no, thank you. We don't want you around. And so it's a challenging environment to try to do rigorous scientific evaluation. Now, as far as the instrument we were using, as I mentioned, it's the Environment and Policy Assessment Observation Tool. The actual EPAL is both nutrition and physical activity. We used a modified version that just looked at nutrition, but even still, it was, like I mentioned earlier, it was a 15-page observation protocol that took 6 hours to observe and enter the data. And with the data that we had, we ended up with an overall EPAL nutrition score and 8 nutrition subscales. Just to give you an idea, it's policy, education, staff behavior, the actual provision of helpful foods, that sort of thing. So the data collection occurred the baseline in January, for spring 2013, and round 2, spring 2014. Adding to the expenditures of resources on this is establishing inter-rater reliability. So we'd have our training sessions where we would do some practices with regards, we'd have like pictures of behaviors pictures of plates, pictures of classrooms, and we would drill to see how close they were getting to myself and my colleague for observing the situation. In addition to that, we'd actually go out in pairs at the beginning of the observations to establish inter-rater reliability out in the field. And once we saw that it was, in fact, strong, we were able to then split up and go out individually. So as far as resources were concerned, we had 2 people at a time doing 6-hour observations per center. So obviously that costs a lot of money and time and effort. So some of the challenges we came in, obviously the centers refusing to participate or dropping out affected our sampling plan and our data analysis plan. As our N got smaller, our options for analyzing the data got smaller as well. Time spent collecting data clearly was an issue. Organizing and cleaning the data, we use Snap survey software. That is a really effective tool that you can scan in forms. You can do it electronically like on an iPad or your phone. But one of the challenges we found was in the child care center settings, our observers found it very useful to actually be able to take a lot of handwritten notes for themselves and for the actual tool itself. And I've yet to come across a good survey system that can read handwriting very well. So what we ended up doing, though, is able to create a web-based interface so that when the observer was complete, he or she could go to a coffee shop, come back to the university, whatever, and then enter their information immediately into the system. And that allowed us to organize it. And the cleaning was the issue of in the situations where the observers didn't have the opportunity to enter their own data and the evaluator coordinator did it instead. There were sometimes hand legibility issues, so we had to go in and quality check the entered data. The advantages, though, is we had, as I mentioned, high inter-rater reliability. We utilized the modified version of the validated instrument approved and recommended by the CDC for this work. And therefore, we were able to have confidence in our conclusions and hopefully publishable products that are being reviewed right now. So fingers crossed that they get picked up. And we definitely were able to provide useful and valuable feedback to our community partners based on our experiences and data that we collected. Now, as far as what the results are, that's my presentation on Wednesday. This one is just the activity of doing the evaluation. On Wednesday, we actually be sharing our results. But in addition to the technical practice of evaluation coming out of this experience, there's just the notion of the importance of keeping in touch, if not constant communication, with the program partners. We were very fortunate in our relationship with the program leadership of the grant that we were perhaps daily in communication with the program side. And with regards to our community liaison that connected us to the centers, that was probably weekly. And if we hadn't had that relationship, we would have even more difficulty getting access to this particular target population. As I've pointed out and perhaps pounded to death, this notion of resource constraints, we were able to utilize whatever institutional community resources we had available. In addition to our cadre of public health students, master MPH students, we also had community partners that were working on the various interventions that were willing to help us. For example, in our smoke-free multi-unit housing evaluation, we had partners from the ALA and the American Lung Association and our local AHEC help us go out and do surveys. So we were able to make up for our limited resources by relationships we had with our community. But one of the kickers that really affected me both intellectually and emotionally was this notion of being sensitive to the survey and observation burden on populations that frequently are assessed as part of social and health programming. We all want to do well and to do good, and it turns out that all of our well-intentioned programming brings with it evaluative components. So those populations being served are also being monitored, assessed, evaluated, measured. And if you have, like I mentioned earlier, we had multiple observers from different organizations in these centers. I passed other observers in the hallways. And that's just the life that these people have to live. They have to endure our constant sort of supervision and assessment. So the extent to which we can not alienate the other, the extent to which we can be engaged and partners in this type of activity, I think will help us definitely with our ability to conduct rigorous evaluation in this particular context of actual frontline community-based programming. Thank you.